Hello, and welcome to the inaugural episode of Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Formats. We are your hosts, Jason Daniels.
And I am Michael Glass.
And some of you may have heard us on our other podcast that we do with our friend Jared Hazelwood, The Media Junkies, which can also be found on Popular Outcasts Network.
Yes. And that should be a little forewarning to you that we are no longer under the control of Jared Hazelwood, so be ready for that.
Yeah. We have no structure anymore, so
prepare. Nobody to keep us on topic.
prepare never to successfully get through an entire episode where we stay on topic. A little bit about what this show is going to be about. Both Mike and I, which anybody who's listened to the Media Junkies would know, are hugely interested in pre-2000s pop culture.
Yes.
And we also both have a deep and sad love for dead formats. So, yeah. Mike, you want to talk a little bit about your preferred dead formats that you collect and are interested in?
Well, I did get rid of the majority of my VHS, or it's just sitting in a box somewhere right now. But my Laserdisc collection has escalated to 65 now, within less than a year of heavy collecting.
Yeah, you pretty much go out of your way to find as many laser discs as you can.
Yeah, I haven't really bought any DVDs or anything in quite a while.
Oh, I'm kind of the same way with VHS. I don't really buy DVDs anymore if I can avoid it.
Unless it's something used that's really cheap. That's about it.
Well, especially for the shit we collect too, because
or shitty like bargain bin like four packs.
Which we do live in the age of bargain bin like multi pack movies. I've noticed pretty much every company these days puts those out.
And half of those movies will be what we're talking about today.
Yeah. Okay, I am really into collecting old video games. My Nintendo collection's probably my biggest. I've got 75 Nintendo games currently, which also has been under a year's worth of collecting, I think, for me.
Yeah.
I'd like to get to 100 by the end of this year.
You got plenty of time.
Yeah. And I have quite a few Super NES, Atari 2600, and N64 games, too. I pretty much collect any kind of old video game system, like pre-PlayStation 2. And I have a Sega 32X at home that I haven't tried out yet.
Oh, God. I forgot you had that.
Yeah.
All right, so about what this podcast is going to be about. That didn't sound right. But anyways, because of Jason and I's love for all these dead formats and video games from the 80s and 90s and love for pop culture from the 80s, 90s, and well, in the 70s too, we decided to do this podcast because as where Media Junkies is more current stuff.
Except for Game of Thrones, we don't do that anymore.
This is to vent our love for everything from the past, then.
Yeah. And we're going to be focusing, if we talk about movies or directors or anything related to movies and TV, we're probably going to be focusing on anything that we can actually collect on a dead format. So a lot of the movies we're going to be reviewing, we're going to be reviewing them from VHS or Beta, Laserdisc, when we finally get around to getting a CED player, or trying out stuff like VCD. Some of the really obscure, like, not very popular at all formats.
Yeah.
And also, like, anything else we talk about, this is going to be a little bit more broad of a podcast, The Media Junkies, because we're also going to be talking about music, literature, pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Old pre-2000s. So, although we will not be talking about vinyl, because vinyl is not a dead format. We're going to get that out of the way right now. Vinyl is very much alive.
Yeah, all right. All right, well, I guess that does it for our intro and whatnot.
Yeah, so expect us to talk about a lot of old shit that hopefully you remember, and if you don't, hopefully you'll be interested. And
I can't wait until we hit some of those ideas, though, that we've had.
Yeah.
Like buying old food and eating it.
Yeah, well, I can't wait until we eat some old cereal from, like, 1985.
And wash it down with some Crystal Pepsi. Flat.
Flat yellow.
Flat Crystal 25-year-old Crystal Pepsi.
Or Pepsi Blue.
Dude, I don't think I was the only person that liked that shit.
I don't remember hating it. I just don't remember it liking it that
really
much.
It tasted really funky, though.
Did you ever try Coca-Cola Black?
Oh, yeah.
Was that the coffee one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They also had a Christmas one, I remember, for a little bit that was, like, spice.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was Pepsi, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that was Pepsi. Fucking weird. Pepsi all the time. Something random.
Yeah, these days we really don't have too much in the way of experimentation when it comes to soda.
Whiteout.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Mountain Dew flavors that we always get, which Whiteout is the best.
Sure. Sure. Anyways.
So
I will be the Jared of the program. So our topic for today.
Yeah, topic for today, both Mike and I, we decided that with this being our first episode and with this being a show all about pre-2000 pop culture and dead formats, we were going to talk about our favorite VHS company and distributor, Full Moon Entertainment, yeah. Which I believe started in 1989,
yeah.
After Charles Band had failed miserably with his last production company, Empire, I think it was called.
But yet Full Moon still clinging to life somehow in 2013.
Yeah, in a very pale comparison to what it used to be. But Charles Band, he, I think, was living in Italy for a while when he was running Empire, and then when that bellied up and he came back to the States and started Full Moon. And he pretty much, what he wanted to do, because he had directed and produced a bunch of movies before that, and he hadn't been happy with the final products and the way that they were distributed.
Yeah.
So he wanted to make a straight-to-video company and put stuff out for the video stores that would have the production values,
yeah,
pretty much of big-budget movies,
budget, yeah,
but made on a low budget.
Except they still had a huge budget.
Yeah. Well, if you watch some of those early Full Moon Entertainment movies from, like, the late 80s, early 90s, and compare them to present...
Yeah.
Like, watching something like Subspecies or Pit in the Pendulum, where they actually shot it in a real castle. And,
like, in Italy?
Yeah. In Italy, or, like, in Subspecies, where they went to Transylvania.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you watch stuff like Killjoy, where it's just, they shot it in whatever city.
A fucking warehouse.
Yeah. Or, like, the Ginger Dead Man movies, where they each take place in one location.
Yeah.
But yeah, old Full Moon movies, they really broke the bank when they...
For most of them, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't hold anything back. And
which is why it took them, like, 3 years to fucking release them at a time.
Yeah, because I think they spent all their money in the early days, and then it would take forever.
What was it? Dagon. Remember, like, we saw that trailer for, what the hell is that movie? Something at
Oh, Shadow Over Innsmouth?
Yeah,
is that what it was,
yeah,
it was originally
that's what
called?
It was. Yeah. And that was, like, what fucking movie was that for? Was that for Meridian?
I think. Oh no, it was on. Was it on the Subspecies or Meridian?
I think it was Meridian.
Either one. They were both released the same year, so it would have been like 1991 when that Video Zone.
And then they changed the name, and Dagon did not come out until like 2002 or 2003.
Yeah,
it took them over a decade to make that fucking movie.
Which, in the case of Dagon, that's kind of sad.
Sad, yeah.
Because,
I mean, that I feel that was shot on location though too. Well, probably because it was still in the early days, actually.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Dagon came out better than some other movies I can think of that took a long time to... Like, Man with the Screaming Brain, for instance, forever for Bruce Campbell to get that one out. I think he was trying to get that made back when he was making the Evil Dead movies.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yawning. But, yeah. So, we... Well, we didn't necessarily just buy a bunch solely for this episode, but we did buy some, and we also had a large number of these films.
Yeah, I had bought a while ago the Puppet Master box set.
We both had. Well, yours is a little more vast than mine, but.
Yeah, well, mine's a little nicer just because it comes with like all the Video Zones, and a bunch of extra trailers and making of and stuff. But the Puppet Master box set that I have, it pretty much has everything from Puppet Master all the way up through, Axis of Evil. And, it's conspicuously missing Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys, but from what I understand, that movie was actually made without any, backing or creative input from Charles Band.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, like
wait, was that released through Full Moon?
No. That was actually made for TV, or I think that was a Sci-Fi Channel movie, actually.
Oh,
Sci-Fi Pictures original.
Well, that explains why Corey Feldman's in it.
Yeah, and you can tell when you watch that one that Full Moon definitely didn't have their hand in it.
Wait, all right, yeah, never mind. I was trying to remember which one was which because sometimes. Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys, and then Demonic Toys and Dollman blur in my head.
Yeah, well, one of the confusing aspects of Full Moon Entertainment is that they really mix and match their shit a lot and borrow from a lot of their previous work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, the Puppet Master series, the Dollman series, the Demonic Toys series all intertwine. And then there's about a billion other movies that they put out that have toys and or dolls in.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell them apart after a while.
Yeah. All right. So which movie do you want to start talking about first?
Or
franchise, whatever.
Well, why don't we start with the Puppet Master franchise? Pretty much the first... Let's see, I think the first seven were released before 2000.
Yeah.
So if we want to just talk about those, because honestly, everything after that kind of got sketchy anyway. Well, even some of those mid-90s Puppet Master movies were pretty rough. The first Puppet Master was pretty much the first Full Moon Entertainment movie.
Was that the official first one?
Yep. Yeah. Right. Which cool. That's pretty much why it's their flagship franchise.
Yeah.
And that one came out in 1989, direct to video. The first one, it's good. For what it is and for that time period, it's definitely an entertaining movie.
I mean, as far as most movies, the first one's never terrible, at least with these franchises on Full Moon.
Yeah, it's the only one to have William Hickey as Andre Toulon. Didn't he die?
I think he died
after the first movie, and then that's why they had to replace him in the second one.
Yeah.
And he presents a very different Toulon than we see in the later movies.
Yeah.
Because every time I see him, I just remember him from Christmas Vacation.
Would you grab my stogie?
Actually, it says he was, we're looking at his IMDb page right now.
He died in the 97.
Yeah, so he was alive for a good decade after that. Maybe, maybe he just couldn't, maybe he just was not able to.
Maybe he just knew better. Out of all the movies that he's known for, they don't have fucking Christmas Vacation in there.
And yet they have The Name of the Rose, starring Sean Connery and Ephraim Murray Abraham.
Yep.
But, yeah, the first Puppet Master movies, it's good. It's worth checking out, definitely. The second Puppet Master movie, that one's all right.
It's all right, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really do anything new or different at that point, but it's only the second movie, so it's whatever. Now, the third one is when they start to get good, though. That's probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, the third one was always my favorite. I remember when that would be on TV all the time as a kid.
And, well, with that one, we see the first appearance of Six Shooter, which is probably one of my favorite of the puppets. Yeah,
he's one of my favorites, too.
And we also see the kind of backstory of Toulon, and we get to see where Blade...
Oh yeah,
came
yeah,
from.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty cool flick. And then after Puppet Master 3 is when they kind of hit a low spot for a little while. Puppet Master 4 and 5 were.
I don't.
4 and 5 were the ones with that kid. Takes over the puppets, and then. What the hell was the name of that that new puppet that they introduced in 4 and 5? Where it basically, like, had Toulon's head on it.
Fuck.
Whatever it was really stupid.
Yeah, I know what
and
you
it was
mean.
Only in those...
I don't know what the hell its name is, though.
I think it was only in those two movies, anyway.
I don't know. But,
That's pretty much when the franchise started to go downhill with those two. They were shot back to back to save on costs, and the main villain in both of them, which is some kind of like demon king from some netherworld,
which looks awesome, by the way.
Yeah, well, I actually thought it was a puppet for the longest time, like on strings, because of the way it moved. But I was watching one of the video zones at the end of the one Puppet Master, and it's actually a dude in there controlling it. And they
it
just
doesn't look like there's a man inside of that thing at all.
No, it looks.
This isn't what I want.
It looks like those creatures in the episode Cat's Paw of Star Trek from the original series, where they're just on strings bobbing up and down.
Yeah,
that's basically what it reminds me of.
I don't know. This thing is not helping me find.
Well, and it didn't help that both of those were directed by Jeff Burr, too, which, if I'm not mistaken, I think he's the guy who brought us Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 and Eddie Presley.
No.
So.
God.
Yeah, Puppet Master 4 and 5 really don't add much to the story, and
they kind of suck until you get the 6.
Six is unintentionally hilarious, and that's why it's worth watching, especially for the end. Six basically follows this, like,
mentally challenged.
Yeah, he's like the, well, I don't know.
I don't know if he's mentally, he's slow, regardless.
Yeah, he's kind of slow and kind of dim-witted, and he's this real country, like, kid who works at a gas station. And the main guy who's controlling the puppets now in Puppet Master 6 manipulates him to work for him making puppets because he knows that he's good with like crafting stuff out of wood.
Yeah.
So he spends the whole movie making these parts for these wooden puppets, which don't get used anyway because the puppet in the end
is like a robot and it has like tank treads on its feet.
Yeah,
they show him multiple times carving little wooden legs.
Yeah, which don't get used. In fact, he even has dreams where he like is turning into a puppet and he has little wooden legs and stuff.
Little wooden polio legs.
Yeah,
that joke's irrelevant.
But Puppet Master 6, it's pretty hilarious, especially in the end when the kid is turned into a puppet.
There's some like plot where he's trying to put this kid's soul in that puppet for some reason.
Yeah, for I don't know why.
There's no real reason why.
It's got one really cool scene in it, and that's the scene with the guy from the beginning who he tried to turn into a puppet.
Oh, yeah.
And then he burned him.
Yeah, yeah.
And his, like, half-burned puppet body is, in, like, buried in the woods. That was a pretty cool effect.
Awesome.
And then after that, the last one that came out in the 90s was Retro Puppet Master, which that one's probably my second favorite.
I'm not sure that I've ever seen that one, though.
It's another prequel. That takes you back before Andre Toulon made the puppets.
Mm.
And, it's not before he made the puppets, but it's... He made, like, rough versions of the puppets when he was younger.
Yeah.
And it's basically about how he brought them to life.
Oh. So, like, an origin story.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
The look of the puppets in that one is kind of cool, because they completely change the way they look and make them look like more like they're actually, you know, very basic puppets.
Yeah, that's cool.
Before he gave them life, and since it takes place, you know, in pre-World War II Europe, I really like that aspect of the third one.
Yeah,
because I like the fact that it was a period piece.
That's cool. I'll have to check. Actually, I think I do have that one. I just don't think I've ever gotten around to watching it.
Yeah. The kid who plays Toulon in it, too, is pretty good.
That's cool.
So yeah, the Puppet Master franchise, basically, if you like movies with puppets killing people, that's your franchise.
Or Nazis.
Yeah. Killer puppets and Nazis. They go together well. That's
the overall theme.
Yeah. One of the other flagship franchises of Full Moon... Trancers. Which, the first movie actually was directed by Charles Band, but not released by Full Moon, because it predated Full Moon Entertainment.
Yeah, yeah.
It was released in 1985. And then Trancers 2 was the first one released by Full Moon Entertainment.
That's my favorite one, actually.
I go back and forth between, actually, number 1 and number 3 being my favorites.
Ooh, number 3.
Yeah, well, number 3, I think the only reason I like
you
number
like the
three,
robot.
Oh, shark.
Yeah.
Well, I like Andrew Robinson and how creepy he is.
Yeah.
Like, if you thought Andrew Robinson was creepy and Dirty Harry and and Hellraiser, he's at his creepiest in Trancers 3.
I guess so. I just love the setup, like, how shitty 4 and 5 are. Wait, when did 4 and 5 come out? They came out in the 90s, yeah, right?
Yeah, they were back-to-back, actually. I mean, they were filmed back-to-back, but I think they were released a year apart. I think number 4 might have been 93, and number 5 was 94.
Yeah.
I mean, I always like the basic premise of the Trancers movies. Tim Thomerson plays kind of a time traveling
future cop,
yeah.
Alternate title.
Yeah, future cop. I forgot that was an alternate title.
Yeah.
And it in a way it's almost like a Blade Runner style story, because there's these things called Trancers.
Yeah.
They're kind of like zombie creatures, and they infect other people and turn them into Trancers.
Yeah, I'm never quite sure how Trancers work, because they change from movie to movie.
every movie's different. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you watch the first one and you try to keep track through all 6 of them,
they're kind of like zombies, and then they become kind of just like brainwashed, like Hulk-esque things.
Yeah, and then
by the time you get to 4 and 5,
by the time you get to 4 and 5, it's essentially
it's like a vampire kind of thing.
Well, they almost remind me of Army of Darkness in a way,
yeah.
Because they're both like medieval type fantasy style movies,
yeah.
And they've, you know, the Trancers like infect other people and turn them into Trancers, kind of like the Deadites,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, but then they, like, feed on, like, people's energy and shit, too.
Yeah.
In 4 and 5, which is why I say kind of reminded me of vampires. But,
by far the best part of that franchise, though, Tim Thomerson.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I like Tim Thomerson, but what the hell's his name? Hold on, I gotta look it up quick.
Are you talking about the guy from the first two? Or yeah. Is that who you're gonna mention?
Yeah. He goes from being a baseball star to being a homeless bum to being
Tim Thomerson's kind of drunk sidekick.
Yeah, and then he becomes like extremely wealthy somehow. And then he fucking buys like fire trucks, and then he becomes a homeless drunk again.
Oh, is it Hap?
Yeah, Hap. Wait, where? Oh, yeah. Biff Maynard, that's his name. Hap Ashby is the character's name.
He is pretty entertaining in the first couple of movies.
His drunken hobo baseball game that he has in the second one?
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that. Well, the second one, one of the things I like about the second one is that it's full of, like, Full Moon alumni,
pretty much. Yeah.
Or, like, regular, you know, cast members. Because you've got Jeffrey Combs in it, who's, you know, basically married to Full Moon Entertainment and Stuart Gordon. And then you've got Tim Thomerson. You've got the dude who played the main villain from Puppet Master 3.
I'm trying to look up quick. I forget his name. Where the hell is he? Dead air.
Oh,
Richard Lynch. Yeah, that's his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy is fucking creepy.
Yeah, he really looks creepy, and it's funny,
too. He always looks like his, like, face is just, like, barely hanging on.
Yeah.
I don't know what it, like, he has, like, terrible fucking skin or something. Like, that picture, he looks all right there. Like, he doesn't look fucking gross.
Well, but in the picture on his IMDb, he kind of looks like Brando.
Yeah.
But in everything else, he just looks creepy as fuck. But yeah, once you get to Transfers 4 and 5, they're not as good as the first three, but they're still worth watching.
Yeah, they're definitely entertaining, for sure.
And definitely stay away from Transfers 6, though, which came out in, I think, 2002. That one's a piece of shit.
All right, do you want to hit on the 4 VHS that you bought?
Yeah, sure.
We don't really have a structure for this.
Yeah, we had already owned quite a few Full Moon Entertainment releases before this, because we are huge Full Moon fans, but just because we knew we were going to record this as our first episode, I bought a bunch of Full Moon VHS tapes of some movies from their classic period, like early 90s, and we watched them all, and they're all pretty much winners. They're pretty prime examples of like the best Full Moon has to offer. Let's see.
Well, we watched Meridian first.
Yeah, Meridian, which is essentially a werewolf rape movie.
Yeah, with like a little bit of Beauty and the Beast thrown in there.
Yeah. And the werewolf looks like Zathros from Babylon 5.
That fucking werewolf, man. Well, just those rape scenes in general. Like,
all the rape scenes are so weird in that movie, because the main plot is
there's two twins.
Yeah.
And they were cursed. They never age or anything, but one of them turns into this beast whenever he feels the emotion of love.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the other one, the only way he can be cured is to die, right?
Yeah, I think so.
But his other brother, like, keeps preventing him from dying because he likes to keep him around and fucking torture him or whatever, right?
Yeah, pretty much, because the other brother is, like, really evil and hates the good brother.
Yeah.
You know, who turns
who's
into
the one
a
that's
werewolf.
Cursed, yeah.
So, the only way I think he can be killed is by someone who loves him.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
So he pretty much makes this woman fall in love with him so that he can get her to kill him, despite the fact that he repeatedly rapes her. I'm not sure how you make someone love you by repeatedly raping them, but maybe it works if you're a werewolf. Maybe, I don't know. But so the girl falls in love with him, and he's trying to get her to kill him through the whole movie, and she doesn't want to. And then in the end, finally, they somehow kill the other brother, which...
Somehow breaks the curse?
Yeah. It's a confusing movie, but it's fun and entertaining, and it looks fantastic because it was shot at... I think the...
Wasn't it shot at the same castle that Pendulum was shot at.
Yeah, okay, I thought so, yeah.
In Italy somewhere.
Yeah.
I forget the name of the town.
Yeah, and the set pieces, you know, at the castle are amazing, and, you know, being shot on location in Italy, they got a lot of really nice scenery shots.
And that's the thing, too, about early Full Moon, though, like, like he said, he wanted to make them, like, high-end, but low-budget at the same time, but... Like, even the acting isn't bad for a lot of these, like, early Full Moon videos.
Oh, yeah. Like, most of the ones we watched from the early 90s, yeah. I mean, there may be a little overacting here and there, but for the most part, these people seem like they've been doing this for a very long
time. And frankly, the people that overact the most are, like, well-established actors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like Lance Henriksen in Pit and the Pendulum.
Yeah. Or just Jeffrey Combs in general.
Yeah, Jeffrey Combs, he does tend to overact sometimes. So yeah, Meridian, that's probably one of my favorites of all the...
Oh yeah, that one I definitely had a lot of fun with watching.
Yeah, like out of all the stuff that's not associated with franchises and it's just standalone movies, that's probably my favorite Full Moon.
Yeah.
And then we watched Subspecies...
Yes.
But just the first one.
Just the first one.
Which, I'm sure that it was intended to be scary. and it does look good with the scenery and the fact that they shot at yet another castle.
Unfortunately, the subspecies themselves are underwhelming.
Yeah, well, see, I guess from what we established from watching the Video Zone... which I guess before we
I
go
guess
any
we
further,
should talk about
we
video
should
zones.
Probably explain the Video Zones because we keep referencing them. The one of the coolest things about Full Moon Entertainment, and I've never really seen this in any other VHS distributor.
No,
is that they release these things at the end of the movie called the Video Zone, which is essentially like a little almost fanzine kind of
I mean it usually has like behind the scenes and
It's got interviews.
Coming attractions and interviews
and they're always introduced by Charles Band himself who just gives us like you know news updates and stuff on Full Moon projects at the time and then you know talks about you know whatever movie we just watched on the VHS. So I always really liked that about that company because it makes you feel like Charles Band really cares about what he's doing.
I mean I think he did at one point.
not so much anymore, but back then he definitely was passionate about what he was doing, and you know that makes you invested in it and it makes you want to be a part of that company and watch everything instead of just like one movie. So a lot of the Video Zones at the end of the movie, since they have interviews and making ofs, we watched some of the,
we got to see multiple ones about behind the scenes, like making of, Subspecies actually.
Yeah. Cause there was the one that was actually on the Subspecies VHS I bought. And then you have one on, your Pit and the Pendulum Laserdisc.
Yeah.
And they were talking about when they were making the Subspecies, they originally had actors in costumes, and they built gigantic sets.
Yeah, because sets that were six times the size of original sets.
Yeah, because the Subspecies are supposed to be these little creatures that grow out of the main vampire's fingers when he breaks them off. So, and when they were talking about that, and they showed... I think they even show those initially in the trailer.
In the trailer, yeah.
And they actually look kind of cool. But for some reason, they thought that they looked dumb, and they didn't think they looked threatening enough. So they decided to basically...
They basically, like, screen-capped scenes where they wanted them in there, where there was no other footage of anybody in, like, backdrops, and then they introduced these shitty little fucking puppeteered creatures in there.
Well, yeah, it almost looks like claymation.
Yeah.
More than, it looks like you're watching Gumby.
Yeah, except they're really stupid and they don't fucking do anything.
Yeah, like I was waiting for one of them to come out riding on Pokey.
We're at 36, but okay. But yeah, I mean, Subspecies was entertaining.
It wasn't as good as Meridian, but it was still good. If for nothing else than just the set pieces and the fact that it was
watching all those girls turn into vampires at the end.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then that dude, I forgot about that guy with the shotgun then at the end too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, and with the three main characters being these three, like, ditzy American females,
yeah.
It kind of reminded me almost of Death Proof.
Yeah.
Like, Death Proof with vampires.
Yeah.
With Radu being Stuntman Mike.
Pretty much.
So that's Subspecies. There's actually four movies in the Subspecies franchise, which I haven't seen any of the later ones.
That was my first experience with Subspecies.
Pit in the Pendulum was one that you own on Laserdisc,
yeah.
Which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite Stuart Gordon movies now, for sure.
Which we'll probably be talking about Stuart Gordon at some point, yeah. On this show. So, but yeah, Pit in the Pendulum, it's just solid entertaining from beginning to end.
Pretty much everything I would expect from him, anyways.
It's Lance Henriksen torturing the shit out of people as a crazy priest.
Yep.
And that's all you really need
and
to know.
And freaking
about
out over the fact that he's in love with a woman.
Oh yeah, and having himself like flogged and shit, and sleeping with a sword over his bed.
But his overacting is priceless in that movie.
Which is funny, because Lance Henriksen oftentimes can be pretty subtle, but
well, yeah, like, a lot of other roles he... Now, like I said, I had watched Hard Target the other day, and, like, his acting in that is definitely over the top, but I wouldn't expect any less from a John Woo film.
Yeah, well, I think with Lance Henriksen and Pit in the Pendulum, a lot of that came from the fact that he is a very method actor,
and yeah.
Probably because he felt like that character needed to be over the top, he went to extremes to make him over the top.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to other movies where he realizes he needs to be toned down.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to wrap this up with talking about the last of the VHS ones that I bought?
Yeah.
Which is another one of
probably,
my all-time favorites.
Probably the best out of the three that we watched.
Yeah, out of those three, yeah. this one was a little later than the rest of them. It was 94.
Yeah.
The other ones were mostly like 89, 91.
Yeah.
Except for all the Puppet Master and Transfers movies we talked about. Those were all through the 90s. The Shrunken Heads.
Yes.
Which is one of very few movies directed by Richard Elfman of Oingo Boingo fame, and who...
Starring a slew of other Elfmans as well.
Yeah, yeah, his son, what the hell's his name? Body Elfman or something
Bodie.
Like that? Bodie.
I always remember it because it's Patrick Swayze's character from Point Break.
Oh, okay. I'll have to utilize that memory technique. Oh, and it's got his mom and, or no, his grandma.
His grandma and
his
father,
dad,
yeah.
In it, in bit parts. And he
and then Danny does.
Yeah, Danny does.
The soundtrack.
Well, he does most of the soundtrack, and it does feature an Oingo Boingo song.
Oh, yeah.
That sequence, the Oingo Boingo song plays over a car chase sequence. That's by far my favorite sequence of the movie. Basically, the plot setup is these three kids. Who are, like, kind of, they're not really nerds, but they're, you know, just, like...
Just, like, average kids.
Yeah, average kids who, you know, get picked on by the town hoodlums, pretty much.
Yeah.
Who are working for this, like, mob kind of boss.
Yeah.
They get involved in some shit that they shouldn't get involved in, and, pretty much get killed.
Yeah, they get themselves whacked, basically.
Yeah, which I was surprised that they showed that. I mean, they didn't show it graphically, but they showed them being gunned down in the streets.
It was the 90s, man.
Yeah, true.
I mean, it was direct-to-video.
yeah, you got a point there. I mean, although back in the 70s, Assault on Precinct 13 was hit theaters. And
yeah. So they get killed, and then Teehee, or I forget what his real name is now.
The guy who played Teehee from Live and Let Die.
is apparently some sort of Haitian cop slash voodoo guy.
Yeah.
And he chops the heads off these boys after their funeral and makes shrunken heads out of them and then casts some sort of voodoo spell that reanimates them and gives them superpowers to a degree.
Yeah, they can fly, and they can kind of, like
electrocute shit.
Yeah, and the three of them can, like, kind of come together and spin around really fast and almost be like a blade.
Yeah.
And they have pretty much any convenient superpower they need to deal with whatever situation they need.
And that one can hide that switchblade somewhere that I don't fully understand where.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I forgot about that one. So, they go around fighting crime and trying to get revenge on the guys who killed them, and meanwhile, the one had started a kind of romance with one of the neighborhood girls.
Yeah.
And he kind of tries to reunite with her, even though he's a shrunken head, in a really creepy scene where he flies up her shirt and, like, basically snuggles in between her breasts.
Which I didn't understand that part either, but
yeah. So over the course of the movie, they get revenge on the bad guys, and Teehee can also turn people into zombies for a limited period of time, and essentially,
everybody that gets killed by the shrunken heads basically turns into a zombie that does nothing but like clean.
Yeah, like clean
the city, like clean up the city. They pick trash up and clean graffiti off. But it only lasts until they like decompose.
Yeah, but if he himself makes people into zombies, they pretty much become zombies forever.
Yeah,
which he does to the leader of the gang of kids and his boss.
Yeah.
At the end. So
pretty awesome.
Overall, it's a really entertaining movie. I mean, It suffers from Prometheus syndrome a little bit, where the plot is furthered at some points just because the kids do really stupid things.
Yeah.
I mean, they get themselves killed by doing a very stupid thing that they didn't need to do, but I can forgive that because the movie itself is actually entertaining, and unlike Prometheus, the movie, it has likable characters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I won't get into that right now.
So, but yeah, out of all the ones that I bought specifically for the podcast, Shrunken Heads was probably the most entertaining.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely the most fun to watch.
So, out of all the ones we just talked about, definitely check out at least the first three Puppet Master movies and Retro Puppet Master.
Yeah.
You can kind of skip the fourth, fifth, and sixth. They're not really vital to the story or the franchise.
Unless you want to see some just weird shit.
Yeah. The Trancers series is pretty solid from the 1 through 5. Skip number 6. That was a piece of shit and didn't need to exist. And then definitely check out Meridian.
Meridian was awesome.
Shrunken Heads was pretty awesome. Pit in the Pendulum, definitely worth checking out. And Subspecies is worth a view. It's not as entertaining as the rest of them, but it is still a classic Full Moon movie.
Yeah.
And Full Moon is still going strong today. I mean,
making Ginger Dead Man and
Ginger Dead Man and Killjoy and Evil Bong movies.
I need to watch that Evil Bong movie. I need to see how bad that is.
I think there's like 3 of them.
Yeah, there is.
And there's 4 Killjoys for some reason. But yeah, I mean, Full Moon isn't as good as it used to be today, but they're a company that we respect a lot, and I feel like no matter how low of a point they ever reach, just because of our loyalty to them from the old days,
I'll always view it. I'm not going to say I'm going to like it or ever watch it again, but yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Oh, and check out our Facebook or our website then, too. We'll leave an address for you guys to
join the Full Moon fan club.
Yeah, we really want to see if they still have an existent fan club.
Because at the end of the video zones, they always talk about joining the Full Moon fan club. And they give a 1-800 number that now just takes you to a direct or a Dish Network phone line or something like that.
Yeah, I was rather disappointed when I called it.
So our last chance is we hope that the actual mailing address still works.
Yeah, because I know that I want to write, you know, 20 years after those videos were made and see if I can still score a Full Moon leather jacket.
Oh, yeah, I want that leather jacket.
And exactly. The soundtrack to Subspecies.
And on that note.
All right, we're not sure how often we're going to be posting these. Right now, it's probably going to be once a month, maybe, depending on if you guys actually are into them and if we can find the time between this and Media Junkies and our everyday normal jobs. We might do them twice a month, like every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, keep the lookout, I guess, and silence.
We'll have to think of a good sign-off, but until we do, I'm Jason Daniels.
And I'm Mike Glass. Thanks for listening.